Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's Colt
Cabana. All right, how you doing? Come on in. This is the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway to the minds, the souls, the hearts, and the lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am a world traveler. I'm a personality, a performer, a podcaster. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler. I am sitting here live in the studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before we go any further, this is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every single Thursday on ColtCabana.com, iTunes, and wherever you get your podcasts from. A couple great ways that you can support: rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, tell a friend. Still not using Snapchat, but if you got it, you can do it that way. Or if you do have a couple of bucks in your pocket, you can give back monetarily. ColtMerch.com and DigitalColt.com. I have t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, the Wrestling Road Diaries documentary with myself and Daniel Bryan, digital downloads, $5 wrestling, all that fun stuff is available at ColtMerch.com and DigitalColt.com. All right, the guest this week, the male gigolo himself, Buff Bagwell, joins us on the show. And this one's real, man. We sit down and he's got real stories, man. The first 20 minutes are probably going to rock your world. And wow, you know, last week Rich Swann was on and he talked about how his father was stabbed to death at 14 years old. Well, this is, giving you a little preview. There's another father, and this time with a gun, story that happens. And I, you know, maybe this has been publicized. I'm not sure. Probably has, but I've never heard it. And it was pretty wild. And then we talk about all the goodies that you're expecting. Now, before this, hopefully you go back if you haven't and listen to episode 166 with Shark Boy. Now Shark Boy was a great episode. It was great to listen to him. One of my favorites. But in the monologue, I guess the precursor to the interview I did with Shark Boy, or the conversation I did with Shark Boy, I talk about how this podcast came to be. Now, I've met Buff Bagwell a lot of times. I have been in many locker rooms and I've been around him a lot, but this time I wrestled him and I tell a funny story. But at the end of the day, I think I saw a good dude. After all these meetings, usually you just pass by a guy, especially some of the guys who've been around the world and done a lot of stuff. And this time, you know, he was forced to talk to me and forced to wrestle me and watch my wrestling because I was in the ring with him. And, you know, I think he took me as somebody that he could genuinely talk to, I guess. And I liked him. I did like him now. I like the version now of Buff Bagwell, and we'll get into it and you'll see it. And of course, he's a Showtime star now. So a lot of fun to sit down with him. It's his story is one that I worry about a lot. Of course, I'm 33 years old right now. So I, you know, not that I'm in the prime of my career, but I'm still in the wrestling years of my career. So there is no worry to me that, you know, right now, but I'm always thinking about the future. I'm always thinking about what's going to happen. And he talks about, you know, how he went from $750,000 to like $80,000 in a span of time. Now, that would be the worst worry in the world to have, right? At one time, you made $750,000. I made $750,000 downloads on YouTube, but sadly not $750,000 via a WCW contract. But the situation, right? The situation of, okay, now what do I do? And it's not always about money. You know, I have a close friend right now. It's not about money. It's about happiness and enjoying what you're doing, enjoying your life and your living style. And I get scared in my mid-40s. What the fuck am I going to do? I think I talk about it maybe every fifth podcast. What am I going to do? But you know what? I said that in my mid-20s. What the fuck am I going to do at 33? And I figured it out now. So maybe I'll be all right. I'm sure I'll be all right. He's doing all right, right? If you don't know, when in doubt, male gigolo. No, there should be a rhyme for that. When you don't know, male gigolo. There he goes. That sounds good. Again, back to the 750,000 downloads. We'll talk about me and Cliff Compton, KFC. PETA tweeted me. They said, we're glad you're happy about your KFC commercial. Now read this. Sorry, PETA. I, you know I don't read. If you made a sweet video, then maybe I'd watch it. But KFC got on board. And here's the story. A fan, a listener, his nickname is Coop. He works for an agency. They get contracted by big companies who want ads. Originally, I was supposed to do something for the United States Postal Service to be about small businesses and how we ship and how we do our shipping, which, of course, I do through Colt Merch. But then a year later, he got back to me and he was like, we have this idea through KFC. It's all kind of guerrilla style, under budget, low budget. But, you know, this is the type of guy that I think is perfect for it, meaning me. And I've always been pitching to my agency, who really doesn't put me out for stuff anymore, about how you put me in something cool and the wrestling world will reach out. In my mind, I think whenever our little secret handshake of a wrestling world goes out in the real world and does something bizarre, like, we're all going to watch. I'm going to watch everything, right? Even Wife Swap with Ric Flair and Mick Foley. I'm going to watch that. I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch them. But wrestlers in the real world, I got to see it. So they did it. Small budget, guerrilla style. KFC had no fucking clue who any of us were. We made a thing. 750,000 downloads as of this week. I think a little bit more. And now all of a sudden, KFC, they love us. They love myself, Mr. 1859. Hopefully this can grow to a little bit more. And it was Coop with a small idea, me saying, I love arm wrestling. I got a friend who loves arm wrestling. I got a couple actor friends and wrestling friends you could see behind the scenes that we brought in. Brandon or Paulie Tomaselli is a wrestler. And then Ricky Gonzalez and Jamie Campbell are Chicago comedians. Sadly, I couldn't have Marty in there. I was going to have him be the referee, but Marty just filmed his own KFC. KFC is Chicago wrestling friendly. They're supporting their Chicago wrestling friendly people. And hopefully more things can happen, but very happy that everyone has seemed to enjoy that, and maybe we can make a thing out of it. Just got back from England, time traveling, of course. Big show for Revolution Pro at York Hall. Sadly, I lost my Revolution Pro championship, which means I'm probably not going to head over that much, at least for now. Hopefully things change in the future. It was a packed show, a great show. The Young Bucks got a too sweet picture with Sting in the back. They were very excited about that. Jay Lethal and Sanjay were there. Also, there's some great UK talent. Hopefully a lot of people understand. I had Marty Scurll on here, but also Project Ego and Shaw Samuels and El Ligero. They were on the show, and there's some great guys. You should go support them at the local shows in England. So who knows if I'm going to be around London for much, but I will be in Edinburgh this August. Come join me for some laughs. Come join me for some fun. I am not leaving you, UK. More importantly, I love you. I love you, UK. Grado, I hope you're going to come play with me up in Edinburgh, you BBC star. You. Have you guys listened? Go listen to the Grado episode. Go watch Insane Fight Club on BBC. So good, man. So good. Song of the Week is an easy one. Sorry, Buff, Mr. Bagwell. It's probably one of the worst songs of all time. Worse for me. I don't enjoy it. I mean, I love it now, nostalgia's sake, but you gotta know, right? You definitely know. Why didn't we talk about this? We didn't, but we should have. But we didn't. American Male's theme song by the WCW composer. Can we assume Jimmy Hart wrote this? Who knows? What a gem. Enjoy it. And we'll be back with Buff Bagwell.
American Males, American Males, American Males, American Males, American Males, American Males, American Males. Say that. American males, 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 American males. They're irresistible, they're unpredictable,
good to have you on the show.
Hey, man, it's really, I've heard so much about it that I'm actually very excited about it. I mean, I spent a long time. I've done an interview that I was actually excited about, so I'm excited to be
here. You heard about it when we were in the ring together.
Yeah, well, it's actually, believe it or not, I heard about it right before. And the guy had put you over so strong that I just added it to the match and everything, and then since then it's all I've heard. And so, you know, you got to realize you're taking a 44 old school wrestler at the age of 44. I'm old school, you know, and so social media, this stuff's all brand new to me.
Did you ever think you were going to be like, I mean, I know it's going to happen, right?
Right.
But like, especially you were like always the young, up and coming, handsome stranger.
That's what I'm
saying. You're not supposed to be the old school wrestler.
No, I'm really, but see what happens is in the TV world, I really believe it's part of the reason why I don't have a job is because when people look at us, they all think that we were all kind of the same age. Well, they don't know that the Kevin Nash, the Scott Halls, the Stings, they're 12, 13 years older than Buff Bagwell. So, you know, that's a big deal, man. But they expect
us all to look the same. Are you going third person here?
Third person.
Yeah.
I went third person.
Then myself.
Yeah, Mark Bagwell. There's Mark. Hey, Buff.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Good to see you, man. No, but really, it really does. People do in TV world think that, and you know that we're all supposed to look the same, and they don't know that these guys are a lot older than me. And I think this hurt me a little bit in the wrestling world because why would they want to bring this guy in that they think everybody looks the same, and I got a little bit better body, a little better shape, can move a little quicker, and they're thinking, hey, man, this guy, how come he's quicker and faster than them? Well, because I'm 13 years younger than these guys.
You were lumped into that bracket.
Yeah.
Was there a at that point, and are we talking like 1998, 1999?
No, we're talking 1989, 1990.
No, but I'm saying like when you're lumped in, when people are watching TV.
Yes.
Nash's.
Yes, 95 on, we're talking about, I think if you ask the normal wrestling fan, they thought we all pretty much were the same age.
But I would say that you were way younger, but you had been in a while.
Right.
So it's not like you were a kid.
No. So I really think they just kind of forgot that Marcus Alexander Bagwell just debuted 5 years ago on Saturday night, you know, show as the young up-and-coming guy. And all of a sudden when Buff Bagwell happened and wrestling got popular, I think everybody forgot about that and kind of involved everybody as the same age, the same group, the same clique. And really, we wasn't. I was 12, 13 years younger than these guys.
So what was that? I mean, I know what it's like to be in a locker room with guys that are 12 and 13. So you guys are all basically on the same fame level, as it will.
Right.
But these guys are 12, 13, 14
years. That's exactly
right. So my question is, like, how was that almost psychologically? Like, did they look down or talk down to you?
At first, I was known at, when I first got signed with WCW, it was in 1990, and I was known as the pretty boy, prima donna, silver spoon, he ain't paid his dues, all those things. Well, the only way a pretty boy can get over in professional wrestling is, can I? Cuss on
swear
the show.
As much as you want.
Okay, as long when they found out that I was a pretty boy badass, then the pretty boy can survive in pro wrestling.
This is behind the scenes, right? Okay.
To the boys,
yeah,
to the boys, and I'm talking locker room stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've had water dumped on me every shower I've ever taken by Stone Cold. And I came out and never said a word. I didn't sell it. I kept my mouth shut because I knew my spot. My spot was, they thought I was a prima donna. They thought I was not paying my dues. So I shut my mouth. Well, then we was at a club one night, and I knocked this guy out cold.
Set up the scenario for me in the club.
We're in a club. It's me, Eric Watts, his wife, and mine. And we're in a club called Max's in Jacksonville, Florida at the Holiday Inn. And we're just in the club, and I've been in 1,000 fights, dude. And I won the Golden Gloves state championship boxing in Georgia when I was 12. So I am a pretty tough kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy walks up, and it was one of those, you know, bump into me, hey, excuse me things. And I said, look, dude, I said, the best thing you can do is walk off. And he goes, if you feel froggy, jump. Well, he didn't get jumped out of his mouth, and I
pow. Yeah.
Eric Watts counted him out. One. Two, like that. I'm already walking out past him because this is not my first rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already walking out.
You know the rules to it.
I know the rules, brother. I'm
which
going
is
to jail.
What? So it's punch,
jail.
Punch, turn, out the door,
yes.
Right?
Oh, I swear to you, I'm passing police officers. So I run across the street, no cell phones back then, nothing to do, nowhere to call, no money, no nothing. I finally had to wait and just sneak back over and get kind of close to my room. And all I had to do was apologize to the guy, and there was no
to the owner or just to the guy?
To the guy hit.
Okay.
That I knocked out cold.
Right. And, you wake him up with smelling salts, he goes,
But literally, Sid Vicious pulled me into a room one day and goes, "How did you knock that guy out?" And I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "I mean, really, I've never seen a guy get knocked out like that." Well, I said,
"I tried to do it to Arn Anderson. It didn't work."
I said, "Ain't like I aimed to knock him out. I threw a good punch and it happened to knock him out." But they were so bewildered that this pretty boy badass. This pretty boy prima donna was a badass. Mm. And then once they found out that, they found out that I was actually a really nice guy.
Mm, right.
And when all that got mixed together, the nasty boys started liking me. Sting was already riding with me, and Sting was catching a lot of heat because they were like, "Why are you riding with that guy?"
Why were you riding with Sting?
He's the first one that saw Marcus Bagwell that everybody else eventually saw.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew. I mean, I shot my father with a gun when I was 16, bro.
How and why?
I mean, he was beating my mom up. Cool. And I was in the house with my parents in 1988. My parents were millionaires growing up.
Okay.
And so I wasn't spoiled, but we had everything we wanted growing up. We were a very rich family growing up in the Marietta area. I drove a Corvette to school.
Atlanta suburbs?
I had heat before I knew there was a word heat.
Right. Was this 80s high school?
This is 80s high school.
I mean, I picture you in these movies, right? Like, are you interchangeable with, like,
yes.
like Sweet 16s or whatever it is?
Oh, yes.
16 Candles.
Absolutely.
And, like,
that is me.
You were the heel.
Yeah, the other one when they're all in detention.
Yeah, Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, right. That's right up. That's
you got your cutoff flannel with your muscles.
Absolutely. So I was the rebel, always pulled in late, walked up to the window, and would literally grab a piece of paper and a pen from the lady that worked at the high school, Sprayberry High School, and I would sign a note and sign my mom's name. Right in front of them. Mm. Because they knew if they called, my mom was going to lie for me. So I grew up in a very rebelish kind of time that money did count.
And where did the money come from for your family?
My parents had a lumber company for 17 years. It was very successful, and we were very rich. Well, in 1988, my parents went broke. The economy went bad, and my mom talked my dad into trying to make it work one more time. We put the house over on it, second mortgage everything, and lost everything.
Did you ever talk about it?
And I'm graduating.
So did the business go down? What happened? They just stopped selling lumber?
The economy just went bad. The houses quit getting built like we just went through the last couple of years.
Right.
And it sunk my parents' business. My brothers worked there. They turned down scholarships for sports to go work for their parents.
So they thought they'd be millions. They don't need it.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be millionaires for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
My brother had a full ride at Tennessee.
I don't need college. I'm going to go make a million dollars.
I can either be a freshman, or I can go home and be a millionaire, drive, you know, and be home. So they worked for the lumber company, and I was going to do the same thing. So I went to school to play baseball and football. I graduated with a 1.8 grade point average. I could care less. My parents were rich, and I was going to work for the lumber company. Well, 1988, the year I graduated, they go broke. And so when they went broke, the first thing I thought of was, you know what? We got to figure something to do. You know, what are we going to do with our lives? Well, my brother, because my dad had enough to get us all into something left. So my brother John, my middle brother, wanted to be in drywall. So he wanted to be the drywall company business. So he got in the drywall business. And then my oldest brother wanted to open up a workout gym, and he's like me, he's really into working out and everything. And at 18, if somebody comes to you and says, "What do you want to do with the rest of your life?" I didn't really know, so all I was trying to think of something to do with it, and I wanted to do something like sports medicines. I wanted to be sports related, you know. And the only first step you can take to that when you graduate with a 1.8 grade point average is massage therapy.
Okay.
So I went to the Atlanta School of Massage. I'm a licensed massage therapist.
Wait, but you also play
right
baseball.
Now. Baseball, football is all counting.
Not at the Atlanta School of Massage.
No, that was during high school.
Oh, okay, okay.
So I had schools looking at me and all that, but with 1.8,
okay,
dude,
gotcha.
You're just not going to make it nowhere.
Wait, but hold on. Where did shooting your father?
Okay, yeah. Shooting the father when the business started going down, 1988, you can realize it didn't just. We didn't just go broke all of a sudden. There was a year and a half or so of stuff going on that we couldn't fix. So all of a sudden, one day I hear my mom and dad, they're arguing. And I'm like, I said, what the hell's going on? You know, so I go running downstairs and break it up. Well, when I broke it up, I kind of overpowered my father. And when I did overpower my dad, it pissed him off. So he went.
Your dad a big guy?
Big guy. You know, for a dad? For a dad. 220 pound man.
Okay.
You know, 6'2". I was the baby. My brother 6'4". My mom 6'1". I'm a 5'10", 5'11 guy, you know. But he went straight to the guns and pulled a gun on me right to my face.
Now, you had guns, why? Because you're a Southerner?
We were Southerners. We were rednecks. We were deer hunters. I had a gun. I had a Colt 45. No pun intended.
I'll take it.
I had a Colt 45 right beside my bed. And this is how we were raised. We were raised around guns. My dad was a gun freak, loved it, loved guns. We were deer hunters. We just loved guns.
So. Yeah, did you, like, when you were a kid, would you ever grab the gun by accident, or, like, were they laying around the house?
We were taught very well, yes, they were everywhere, okay. But we were also taught very well...
Gun education.
We took classes for each time we got deer hunting license. Our father was excellent at teaching us how to never point a gun unloaded, whether you think it's loaded or unloaded. We were taught very well by my father about guns.
So this is the very first time that this is... Anything like
ever,
this.
Ever, okay. Ever, first time it's ever
so
happened.
He points the gun at you.
In my face and says, come on, badass, come on, what do you got? You know, I told this story to Kevin Nash one night at the, and also in Jacksonville, and before it was over, I was telling it for the 20th time to the 20th other wrestler.
Oh, I'm sorry to have
it. It was great because he kept saying, oh my God, yeah. He could tell by the way I told it I wasn't lying.
Who's he calling? Ice Train.
Stone
get over
Cold Steak. Hey, Stone Cold heard it.
Yeah.
Stone Cold was one of the guys. Everybody kept coming down, Dallas Page. But me and Kevin.
Joey Mags, you got to hear this.
You got to hear it. He goes, you got to tell it again. So I tell the story again. I tell it again because it was such a great story.
Of course.
And it was a shoot. And so, sure enough, my dad goes, come on, badass, so where are you at now? Well, I'm about flipped because of what we've been going through during the time of us going broke. And I said, look, man, put the gun down. I said, all that's going to happen is you're going to kill one of us. You're going to prison. I said, this is ridiculous. This is dumb. About that time, the doorbell rings, of all things. And it's the cable guy, not Jim Carrey. But
I was going to make that joke,
yeah,
but then I was going to not make it because I was like, I don't want to ruin it. But good for
sorry.
You. Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. I'll fill it in.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, Jim Carrey shows up at the door. No. And it was, back then, it was only one cable company. It was called Summit Cable. And I'll never forget this as long as I live, of course. When you shoot somebody, usually you don't. And so he comes up. My mom goes to the door. And when she does, he shoves my mom in the back of the head. And I go after him. I'm flipped and done, too. And he pulls the gun back on me like, he said, come on. Oh, so you're going to jump me, huh? Okay, well, come on, big man, come on. I said, you put that gun down. I said, I'll beat your fucking brains out. I said, that's simple, you know. And he goes, come on, big man, come on, badass. And so about that time, he goes, get outside and get all the keys out of the cars. So I go outside and just really just being randomly speaking, I said, this wasn't way out of the realm. It's just the first time guns were involved in our house of pointing at each other.
Right.
You know, and I said, but a good old country fight and a Southern family, it wasn't way off the mark, but it was the furthest one's ever gone. And all of a sudden, I walk outside and it's the cable guy talking to my mom. And I said, you know what? One day I said, I'm gonna kill him. And just really just saying it, just not really meaning it. Well, my mom was kind of blocked in by his car, so she knew if she got out of there that me and my dad could work it out. probably. Mm. And so she was trying to get out of there. While she was trying to get out, and because she was blocked in by his car, he comes out, shoots both tires out of the car she was in, trying to leave, and pulls my mom through the window.
What do you think? Drunk?
When this, no drugs, no drinking.
Just rage?
This is just, I've gone broke after being rich for 25 years, and I'm flipped. There was zero drugs, zero drinking involved. I would tell you, if it is the way I am, there wasn't. It was just flat out. It just was rage. Mm-hmm. And he pulls her through the window. And it's the only time, and I'm sure a doctor could tell me what happened, but I don't know. But I literally had a full-fledged blackout. Since the beginning, since I was a child, we had three or four guns on top of our refrigerator, which is right at the front of our house. And because that's where the living room was. I ran right past four guns in a 7,000 square foot ranch house, all the way back to his bedroom where all the guns were, and got a gun. And I happened to grab a gun that he had, these special bullets that were police explode blue tips, so that when they hit the object, they exploded. And I had no idea I grabbed that gun. I did not come back to vision until I was back outside. And I remember being back to vision, and I said, "Hey," and my dad looked up, and he had his hand on the door handle of his car. And he looked up at me, and I said, "You want to pop some caps?" Because that was an old cool saying back then, you know, you pop a cap, sure. You know, badass. Mm-hmm. And I said, "You want to pop some caps, motherfucker?" And he looked at me like I was crazy. And I swear to God, it went into total slow motion for me. And I remember just thinking, and it was a revolver. And I remember I said, "Just shoot the windshield out." You know, that's what I thought. Just shoot the windshield out to show him you mean business. And for some reason, about halfway through there, I said, "Just kill him.
Fuck, man.
Just fucking kill him." And that's what went through my mind.
Because of the way he's treating your mother?
Because of the way he's been treating all of us.
It's just how
it was all coming down. It was coming down pretty rough.
This was a big
thing. It was a big deal. It was coming down. And I was at home. Other brothers were able to go to their houses. I was having to live in it. And it was all getting really ugly. And so when I shot, I actually hit his hand, his arm that was reached out on the door handle, and he's got a metal plate. He's got a metal plate and screws in his arm to this day, and he dodged around the back of the car, and in my house, that means, you know, this ain't over. Here comes a gunfight, so I go running upstairs and get my 45 automatic, put one in the chamber. Grab an extra clip, go back downstairs, and I hear him knocking at the door, and I open the door real fast, and there's my mom. And she goes, "You shot your father." And I go, "Are you crazy? Are you crazy, bitch?" I said, "I was trying to help you out." So I go over the phone, I call my brother John. I said, "Hey," I said, "you need to get over here." He goes, "What's wrong?" I go, "I just shot Dad." He went, "What?" So here he comes. The Summit cable guy, I'll never forget, in slow motion when I was going through the windshield, thought,
"Oh, God, he's still there, huh?"
I swear to God, I remember this vision. He looked at me, in slow motion, I remember him diving into the back of his van because he saw the whole thing.
Right.
He called the police.
Of course.
And because there wasn't no cell phones, he radioed it in probably. "Well, here come the police. Here come the police over." And I'm upstairs with a 45 automatic still in my hand. And I walk outside before the police get there, I walk outside. And I want to be able to talk to him without crying. And I couldn't, but I tried. And I said, "I want you to know," with the 45 automatic in my hand, I said, "I want you to know you have put us through hell this last year or so." And I said, "And I hate your fucking guts for it." And he was zero tears, zero... nothing on his face, and he was holding his arm. He was bleeding, and blood was everywhere. And he said, "Look, man, I know how you feel," he said, "but I'm bleeding to death right now." And I said, "I hope you die right where you're fucking standing." And I started crying. I didn't want to cry, but I cried and walked back inside and sat upstairs and heard the cops come in. They were like, and I hear my dad say, I shot myself cleaning my gun.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, but the cable guy knows you didn't do that.
Right. So and the cops know that.
Right.
So they're like, "Well, how did you do that?" So finally, keep in mind, we were rich and all that, and that draws attention when you live in a little town and you become having heat, which we call jealousy back then, but that, we call it heat in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And he said, he said, I did this and that. And then one other cop said, hey, you need to watch your language to one of my brothers. And they ain't got a warrant. We've got no complaints. We've got nobody making a complaint.
Yeah, except the gunshots.
Yeah, but they're still... If he don't want to file a if I punch you in the mouth and you don't want to call the police, that's your choice.
Okay.
You know, so he said, my brother goes, what'd you say? He goes, fuck you, pig.
Jesus.
Right to the cop. He goes, you ain't got a warrant. As a matter of fact, my dad gets mad. I'm at the top listening to this whole thing, top of the steps. And my dad goes, matter of fact, all you motherfuckers get out of my house. They've got, a police officer has got to get out of your house. If that is your residence and they do not have a warrant and there's no complaints filed up to this day, you tell a cop to get out of your house, he's got to get out of your house. He can't arrest you. He can't do anything. That is a police officer on your...
Yeah, but that cable guy, was it out...
The cable guy, my parents sent one of our workers over that was there.
He's saying here's the thing.
Right, to tell the whole truth. So it became his word against ours. And even if it was true, which it was, that I shot my father,
right,
he wasn't filing a complaint.
Fuck. So are you
charges were never filed. Me and my father are best friends.
Best friends.
Best friends to this day.
But also, and like we haven't even gotten into wrestling, but also you were ready to murder.
Oh, I wanted to kill him. I decided, and here's what he thought. He thought I had my 45 automatic. That's how fast I squeezed him off.
But if you like sat back and like thought of like, hey, like I'm okay with being a murderer and then like going into like the rest of your life.
No, it didn't bother me at all. I will tell you this. My parents, my family looked at me a little funny, like at dinner, and like my brothers would keep an eye on me and stuff once in a while. But we were a pretty wild family.
But I'm talking about like you, like, you know.
It didn't bother me at all because that's how I was raised. I was raised to do what I did. Even my father, when he finally called me, because I didn't ring his phone, he called me about 2 weeks later and he said, I want to tell you I'm sorry. I want to tell you I'm in the wrong. And I want to tell you, you did everything I taught you to do as a child to protect your mother. You did exactly what I raised you, how I taught you, and you can come home anytime you want.
Whoa.
And I waited a couple days, went home. It was never quite right.
Sure.
And ended up moving out. You know, I tossed him the remote or something, and he'd do the, he'd do the sale gimmick.
Right.
And I go, oh, my God.
So I'd imagine the distance, the years, and let it go through.
But years, time, the old saying is true.
Okay.
Time heals all
pain. So while you're gone, now is that when we start wrestling?
While I'm gone.
Why did I hear a story that somebody found you in a parking lot once?
Nope. Missy Hyatt is who found me. Missy Hyatt is who found me to be a wrestler. I was a massage therapist.
Or in your apartment?
After the shooting, I go to Thought Massage Therapy School. Okay, that's when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go to massage therapy school, I'm at the pool one day, trying to figure out what to do because massage was a wrong decision. Because in massage therapy, women is really who needs to be massage therapists. Not a good-looking male of any sort, because women don't want a good-looking male to massage them. They get very self-conscious, I found out. They get very nervous. So it's either a woman or a feminine kind of guy is what really makes money in massage therapy. I didn't know that. Wasted 9 months, $5,000. But I'm a licensed legal massage therapist.
Listen, I've been watching a lot of weird videos lately. Like scenarios.
Yes.
You know, like, did that ever happen?
No.
Oh,
but I work for a company called Corporate Sports, which was a legit company. But I'd have women walk in and literally cancel the appointment as soon as they saw me. So it just I wasted 9 months.
Were you hoping that one was like, will you have sex with me?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? Let's do it. Come on, let's do it.
Right.
And so I'm at the pool one day trying to figure out what to do. My first wife was a stripper. She's who was part of, you know, the whole world of keeping us supported. And everybody thought that that my massage therapy was helping out. It wasn't doing anything. My wife was a stripper and she was paying all the bills. So,
did you meet her at a strip club?
No, it was her idea to be a stripper. It was never my idea.
You guys were in a relationship and then she went to stripping?
Her and her girlfriend one night, we were all broke in apartment complexes trying to figure things out. And her and her girlfriend one night go, let's go to this amateur contest.
Oh, that's how it all
And they went and made all this money. And we go, wait a minute, we made all this money. We can do this.
Right.
So they became, you know, next
And
5
you're 19 years old.
19.
You got married at 19, huh?
I got married at 20.
Okay.
Got married at 20. Right. And so So Misty, so long story short, I'm at the pool one day and I see blonde hair and big boobs across the pool, way across the pool. Well, she had told the person moving her in to move her next door to me. I didn't hear any of this. The girl didn't know who I was, didn't know I was married, that was checking her in or whatever. Well, when I get back to my apartment, I'm in 1504, directly across the hall. She's in 1505, Missy Hyatt is. I don't know Missy Hyatt from nobody.
So wrestling's not even your thing then?
Not even my thing. We watched it as kids. The things you hear now, oh, I watched that back a long time ago. I don't watch it as much anymore. Things we hear a thousand times back when wrestling wasn't cool.
But you were never like straight up obsessed?
No, my brothers were.
Casual.
We'd come home from deer hunting and watch the Road Warriors beat up somebody. We liked Dusty Rhodes. And that's about as far as it went.
Right, okay.
You know, but my brothers were a little more into it. But that was the Gordon Solie days. And there was only, 100 people at the show when you'd watch it, So it was. It was just low key, but we loved it and watched it. We were a country, southern family. And so we get there. So that night, I thought it was weird that she was moving in right next door to me, but still didn't put nothing together. That night, she knocks on our door. I look at the eye hole, and it's Missy. It's this blonde hair girl.
Right.
I let her inside and she goes, "Hi, I'm Missy. Hi, da 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 da." And she acted like we knew her. She goes, "Do y'all not know who I am?" and we were like, "Sorry, who are you?" She goes, "Well, I'm on this wrestling show called WCW." Da, 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 da. And we were like, "Well, I'm sorry, we had no idea, that
I got massaging to do. She's stripping.
I'm massaging. She's stripping. I mean, come on, what do you want to fit in here? What's going on?" So anyway, she tells the truth. She says, "I moved in next door to your husband because I saw him at the pool today. And I had no idea he was married." So she told on herself. Wow, okay. We become great friends. And Missy had a lot of fun with a lot of my buddies.
Nice.
I set her up with everybody I had. So we became great friends. This is all in her book.
Right. That's where I did read it.
She put it in her book. And it's a true story. She's who got me trained. I went to the WCW training school down in Griffin. And went, $3,000 for this? I ain't got $3,000. No. So Steve the Brawler Lawler trained me for $1,500. I think I wrestled twice in the ring, okay. And then they made me the TV champion. And I was called the Fabulous Fabian.
Of Global?
Nope.
No.
North Georgia Wrestling.
Okay.
Was my first gimmick.
And that was on television?
It was on Channel 69 in Atlanta.
I don't know. Who was on top of North Georgia Wrestling?
Was Joe Pedicino. Do you remember him?
The name sounds familiar.
Joe Pedicino.
He became an announcer, am I correct?
Yes. He was the announcer then, but he owned the company. And it was called North Georgia Wrestling. And, a lot of guys were on there. Conan Chris Walker, do you remember him?
Yeah.
He was on there. Disco got his start there. Scotty Ray's got his start there. A lot of guys actually came from North Georgia Wrestling.
And that was what, just
because it was TV instantly.
How did they have TV when NWA was in Georgia?
We did it in an auction barn. Okay. We pulled this black curtain and hit all the stuff they were selling on the auction barn stuff and had a wrestling match in front of 50 people. And we would tape it with this little camera, and it was called North Georgia Wrestling, and it had a
was
time
Steve
slot.
The Brawler Lawler the king
Steve
there?
Steve the Brawler Lawler, he was the man. He looked like Jerry Lawler.
Oh, I didn't even mean to say that, but was he on top?
He looked like Jerry Lawler, but he didn't wear the crown and all that. He just looked like Lawler.
So he was your in. He's like, he works for this, and then he gets you into the.
He got me into it, trained me, which was two times, and they made me the TV champ.
Right, because of your look or what?
Because of my looks,
right.
And I was young, and they thought, and they saw it. And plus that, I kind of got it. I kind of could hit the ropes, and I knew I kind of could learn. But I learned in the best place possible, which is in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
When you mess up in front of people, you don't mess up again.
Right.
You feel so stupid. So I really learned the best way you can learn, which is just throw yourself out there and go.
And who gives you Fabulous Fabian? Was that right?
Joe Pedicino named me the Fabulous Fabian. There was a singer called Fabian.
I kind of remember that. What did he sing? Do you remember?
No, I can't remember if it was country or what, but he had high hair like I had, and they called him Fabian. And that's where Joe came up with the idea, and they put me on TV as the Fabulous Fabian. Well, from Fabulous Fabian, Global sees me, takes me out there, Handsome Stranger.
Are they watching the 50 people TV tape?
It was a pretty, decent show. As far as I remember, a lot of the wrestlers watching it just for kicks, for fun, because it was so bad.
Sure,
seeing the guys
I know about
hit
yeah.
the ropes and do it. hit each other in the head, not even know what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And it was horrible.
Right.
But it was still, looking back on it, it was great entertainment to watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
So Global opens up, and of all things, Bill Eady thinks of the Handsome Stranger.
He thinks of it before you're there?
Before I'm there.
So he's sitting on a Handsome Stranger with nobody to play the part?
That's right. And then I come in and become the Handsome Stranger.
Because I remember, I was 13 or something or whatever. I'd come home from school and Global would be on.
4 o'clock ESPN, yeah. A great time spot.
And I mean, Handsome Stranger is something I definitely remember.
Yeah, I mean, Lightning, X-Pac came from there. Mm-hmm. Booker T, they were the Ebony Express. Mm-hmm. The Patriot came from there. Conan Chris Walker was there. Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. I mean, it was a
right.
We really thought, and even thinking back on it, I think now that it was going to be the third company.
Mm.
I mean, sure, we really
ESPN
did.
If you told them right now, and ESPN
o'clock,
was just as powerful, right?
It was a strong 4 o'clock time spot on ESPN. We were thrilled to death.
Now you didn't know who any of these guys were.
None of them. I pulled a gun on Eddie Gilbert a month before and had to wrestle him. Missy were getting divorced. That's why Missy moved into the apartments.
Right.
Okay. They were fighting over my gas grill. I opened the door with a 45 automatic in my hand and I said, "Hey, brother, get off my grill." And Eddie turns around and I go, "Hey, Asif Eddie Gilbert, nice to meet you." So I go from pointing a gun at Eddie to shaking his hand to having to wrestle him.
Right.
So I go to Global and have to walk up to Eddie and go, "Hey, Eddie, are we cool about the gun thing?" You know, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, we're cool."
It's another day in his life.
Yeah, sure, you know. He blew it off like it was no big deal. But to the ironic to it part is that, you know, here I pull a gun on a guy and then I'm wrestling him a month later, you know, so it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So, but I really learned a lot at Global. And Global really, really dialed me in because it was a lot of old timers that really knew how to wrestle. And I really got to really learn a lot in Global. And from Global came Marcus Alexander Bagwell to
the rest. Yeah. I'd imagine Global is, what a company to get to, just like you said, learning in the ring.
Yeah. Oh, tremendous. Well, the first thing I did was we went from the North Georgia wrestling where we didn't go over anything, talk or anything over matches, to walking in and the Hills and Babies were in the same locker room.
Mm.
And I went, "You mean you guys are in the same locker room?"
This is much easier.
I said, "You guys are in the same locker room?" And I went, they go, "Yeah, what do you mean?" I go, "I may be able to do this."
Yeah, right.
So, you know, I went mentally from being horrible to being pretty good to really learning the craft of pro wrestling. And then it was on, man. I really just learned a lot and listened.
So I know you were rich, you were broke. I'd imagine at the point where you're in the apartment complex with your with your wife, are you just making, like, kind of getting by?
Or? Then I started stripping. At the same time, Handsome Stranger happened. There was this place in Atlanta called the Lemon Peel.
Okay.
Massage therapy's out the window. I'm now trying to become a pro wrestler.
Right.
I am the Handsome Stranger on ESPN.
Yeah.
But it's paying $75 a match.
Right.
Okay, which is a high payoff for an indie show back then.
Yeah.
So $75 a match, which ain't paying the bills.
So you're not making money.
I got
money
a 91
yet.
Corvette and a 91 Jeep, white, both of them beautiful, because my wife was a stripper.
Right.
And they all thought, because I was wrestling, they're rolling over there. Mm. We weren't rolling because I was wrestling. We were rolling because my wife. Well,
you think you were going to be rolling when you went to Global?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I was supposed to be the third guy to make a contract for the $100,000. And
who were the first two?
Patriot and Raven.
Okay.
Which,
of course, Raven's second.
Yeah, Raven was second. And he was Scott Anthony, the Palm Beach heartthrob was his name back then. And I was supposed to be third, and I got a call from Bill Eady, and they were closing the company. Oh. And I was like, what am I going to do now? And then Magnum TA called me up the next day, and I had a meeting with Dusty Rhodes, and Dusty Rhodes met me and hired me, and 25 years later, here I am talking
to
Colt.
Were you stripping as the Handsome Stranger?
Yes, we as the strippers would watch me on TV, and they were like, "That is so cool, you're a wrestler, man, it's so cool," you know? And I'm, you know, I
did
was trying to
gimmick?
Make it. Huh?
Did you do the gimmick?
No. I did.
That's what I meant. Where you did, ladies and gentlemen.
No, we did the, keep in mind, this was just getting going, and I didn't know what the rules were and all that. Plus that, I didn't know how to put that into a character as far as the rest of it. Now that you think about it, it would have been genius. But I was, back then, it was a construction worker. It was old school, you know?
So what were you?
Right.
Is that what you did?
Oh, I did the construction worker gimmick. They had a character for each, you know, each person.
Okay.
And mine was the construction worker. I came out with a helmet and the belt. And
I mean, I know the answer, but you had no shame in doing that. Like,
oh, zero shame. Right. I love it. Yeah. I had a blast. We had a door out there. We had a door outside that just, it was just a nonstop rotating door of fun. Just,
right. That's a real thing too, huh?
Right. Good. Real thing. Good. Right. And then in between sets, it was just a door that we just went right outside.
Amazing. Amazing. Awesome.
It was a lot of fun.
So listen, here you are, sober and clean. And,
yes.
And it's nice to see. And I mean, but you know, this is a very positive podcast.
Yes.
But you know, I'm not going to lie, right? I hope you don't lie to yourself.
No, that's one thing I don't do. I tell it straight up.
So, I mean, you've had some trouble in your
life. Had bad troubles,
man. And sadly, I've seen you. I always kind of say this. I go, because I've been on a lot of shows with you. Not maybe that you don't even know, but it's the two sides of Buff Bagwell.
Sure.
So, like, sometimes you'll just see this wonderful, nice, great man.
Right. The other one's drooling on himself.
And the other one's yeah.
Yeah, I know. And that really had a. And it was the pill is called Soma, and every wrestler does that.
I only bring it up because you are. I think you're in a good spot right
yes,
now.
Yes, I'm in an excellent spot right now, and the excellent spot was getting Soma out of my world.
Okay.
There's no way to function properly on Somas, but for some reason we juggled it really good for a long time.
So that
where
was
we
like,
knew when to take it, when not to take it. And then all of a sudden that take it after the match started taking it, you know, as soon as we got to the building and having a few beers. And it is, you know, like anything else, it becomes a little bit more. But for a long time, we really had it down to a science to where we didn't do anything wrong, or not a beer or anything, until after the show, you know.
Okay.
And then it became a little sooner. And then you're at TV at 12 o'clock with nothing to do. Like, let's pop a couple Somas. You know, and it finally, in rehab, they call it the invisible line. And once you cross that invisible line, you start having to have it. When I started having to take a Soma not to feel bad is when it became zero fun anymore. But now you're hooked. Now you're on it, and you got to have it. And
not
it
to feel bad
no
physically
fun.
Or emotionally?
Physically.
Okay.
Physically.
So your body's hurting.
Your body is, like, really needing it. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. One day I was going down the road with Lex and Liz, and I just didn't feel right. And I described it to Lex perfectly. I said, Lex, I said, I'm sweating. I don't feel good. And Lex must have already crossed his invisible line mm-hmm. and hadn't told me.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, if you take a couple of pills and have a beer, it'll go away. I said, huh? And that was it. Once you have that feeling, and I knew I could take a couple of pills and drink a beer and it go away, you are hooked.
Right.
Because who wants to feel bad?
Right.
Nobody. So every time I had that feeling coming on, here it went down, there went the beer, and then you lose your job. Mm. Well, then at least it was a collar on us with a leash at WCW that you had to somewhat maintain your sanity and your sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when that went away is when you started hearing, you know, the deaths and the overdoses. I have wrestled, not met, not shook their hand, not knew them. I have physically wrestled 70 dead guys now.
Fuck.
And that's not nothing to be bragging or being cool
right.
about. That is just a fact.
But when does that scare you? Because it didn't scare you.
Well, to be honest with you, to put it in perspective for you, 70 of the 40 of those 70 would have swore I was going to be one of those 70. Mm. And so did I.
And there's probably a time where it was going to be. Right?
And there was probably a time. There was a few times I think I was close, to be honest with you. Not on purpose. It had been an accidental overdose. But it was just, we're just on the road and just didn't, you know, just you're just flipped because you've been on the road so long. And that's the only thing I have against wrestling. I think they should have a little bit of a break, a little bit of a season to where the guys can take it a little time off and take a deep breath and eat, whether their gimmicks are body and they can, you know, eat what they want for a little while or whatever it is, they can rest for a little bit. Well, wrestling every week, you know, you got to be on, you know, and that's a lot of pressure behind that. And so I think with the pressure and everything else, it's a perfect atmosphere for a drug addict. And it just becomes, you know, an easier way out from getting away from it. And we would just all, and everybody did it, you know. And, you know, and when I say everybody, I mean everybody.
It was a culture, wasn't it?
It was just a somas, and wrestling just was ABC, you know, just that's the way it went, you know. Wrestlers, somas, and Coors Lights. That was the, in that order, brother. And
fanny packs.
The fanny pack.
And top hats. Right?
Top hat. It was all together. It all went together. And I basically what happened to me was I walked in on a friend of mine that died April. This coming up April will be 2 years. April the 12th will be 2 years, and I walked in and actually found him myself dead. And he
just a friend or a wrestler?
He was actually my manager and a friend, and he would help me with my. He'd go to my shows with me and help me with my gimmick table and stuff. And he was just a retired millionaire board friend.
Okay.
That was friends with me and my wife. Loved my wife. They became better friends than me and him did even. And but toward the end, he started drinking like out of the bed, vodka OJ, out of the bed. And here's Buff Bagwell, an ex drug addict, saying, "Dude, you got to quit drinking." You know, I mean, you know, drinking wasn't my problem. I drank for the pill. As soon as the pills were out, I didn't drink a beer no more. So I was never, and this is hard to say to a rehab facility because they'd say, no, you can't say that. But I was never an alcoholic. But if I go to a AA meeting, I would say, "Hi, my name is Marcus Bagwell. I'm an alcoholic drug addict." Because that's what you're supposed to say. But literally, there'd be half beer cans in my refrigerator because as soon as the somas ran out, I went back to pro bodybuilder, get in shape. You know, don't miss the gym. I never missed the gym. I never missed a workout. I kept all that in order still. So it wasn't a problem as far as being lazy, not getting my stuff done. I still got everything done. I just was a functionable drug addict. and most of my clique was.
Right.
And long story short, I was able to finally, you know, through seeing my friend die, I had a bad car wreck. And 7 days after he died. And the day I had my car wreck was exactly 14 years from the first time I broke my neck, on the exact same day 14 years earlier. April 21st, 1998, I broke my neck on TV. April 21st, 2012, I break it in a car wreck. So it just came to me, dude, you know, it's time to make a change here. There's obviously something, somebody's trying to tell you something. You've lived more than 9 lives. Yeah. Come on, man. Somas is your only thing. You're not going to be able to function no more. So I just finally just put them up. I just said, that's it. It's done. It's over. I take a drug called Suboxone that is a opiate withdrawal medicine. And that's the only thing that I take, and I get that prescribed. And it's so weird to actually have a prescription and take it
and follow the rules,
take it right. Go back and get it filled at the right time instead of juggling doctors
and not having to con somebody.
Oh, God, and buy them over the street. Right. It just relieved me. And as soon as I did and got serious about it, man, things started happening better for me. People started seeing the real Mark Bagwell, right.
Like I did,
right? Like you did. Mm-hmm. You met me at the time of mm-hmm. being a real Mark Bagwell, the eyes, the voice, the true Mark Bagwell that people really learn to like. And so, you know, that was big to me too. And I knew they knew, but I just didn't care. I was depressed. I went from making $750,000 a year to making 80, you know. Mm-hmm. I was at a bad spot all around. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really care. But when I finally said, time to grow up. And I got my life back together. Things started happening good. And I think because I got my life back together, if you want to call it a higher power, if you want to call it God, you can call it whatever you want. But I think because of me doing right, I think that my life started coming back together for
me. I have one last thing to ask, and then that's going to lead into the fun thing that you're doing now.
Okay.
Was there like a rivalry with you and Scott Steiner bodybuilding?
Oh, there was a...
I don't know the background.
It broke us up.
As friends?
It broke us up as friends. Okay. Now we're friends now.
Okay.
But it broke us up and television world as friends.
Okay, as casual fan, me, Colt, when I'm in high school watching you guys, it's just like, those are the two biggest fucking dudes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like, I wonder, like, you know, maybe I wonder, like,
well, the boys were stirred up on who looked the best each week.
Right, right.
You know, and when I really got back into shape, dude, I was, I mean, it's hard to stand against Scott Steiner, and I could. Face on, I could stand against Scott, but Scott would always turn, and nobody could beat his arms, you know? So he'd always turn on me, but there's an interview, if you go online and go to YouTube and look, when me and him, I got an NWO toboggan on, and he ends up turning on me. If you watch that interview, that is a 100% shoot interview, and we wasn't speaking or anything, but how that came down was, is he started listening to the boys, you know, because they were stirring the shit up.
Bagwell's looking bigger than you.
Bagwell looks pretty tight today. You're looking like kind of loose, Scotty. He's catching you. So the boys were having
the number one boy doing that?
Luger. Luger was vicious. He was my friend, and he's stirring the shit against me. I'm like, Lex, don't do that to him. So Scotty went out and called me a stripper, and the boys had a field day with it. But the world didn't really understand. So I went out and did a skit as Scott Steiner, and it was good. Mm. And I nailed it. Scotty ripped the locker room down, and they had to hold him back from beating me up. Well, before there was reality TV, that's what Bischoff would do. Bischoff would take things that were happening backstage.
Gotcha.
And put it out there on, and make them wrestle. Right. So I had to go to Scotty before that match at Starrcade and go, do I need to defend myself? And he went, no. And I said, okay. So we get in the ring, and I don't know until we lock up, but I'm like, ah, you know, and then he worked with me the whole way. At the very end, but he
that's
got a little...
That's the show is Luger stirring it up. Like, that's the show. That's what's going to make money. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That's the reality show.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's, you know, the camera backstage watching him. So we were doing reality TV and could have done a really good one if we knew what was coming. But that's what Eric was doing was, for example, the Kim Page, Dallas Page gimmick that we did. You know, me and Kim started flirting backstage a little bit, and Dallas got mad about it. Well, what is Eric made an angle out of it. You know, so, you know, there was a lot of things going on backstage. Eric was a genius at, which was, and it was close to reality TV.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, boom, that goes into body stuff, which goes into you now.
Yes.
Showing up on Showtime. And what's the show is just Gigolos.
It's called Gigolos.
Yeah.
It shows at 11 o'clock on Thursday nights. And how this all came about is, if you want to look it up, it's Cowboys, the number 4 Angels, Cowboys for Angels. And if you want to look me up on Twitter or anything, it's at Real Buff Bagwell. And that's my Facebook, Twitter, and everything. And but what happened was, is my wife, of all people, when you're a wrestler for 25 years, it's really hard to go from A to B in life. And I didn't realize it until I tried. But to go, I can't be a school teacher. I can't.
Did you try to go for a real job?
I really tried. I tried to go to sell cars, and it just was about wrestling. It was just impossible. I could not find an avenue. Plus that, what car dealership is going to let you off Friday and Saturday to go wrestle? Nobody is. So I couldn't find a job that fit what I needed to do. I still make a lot of money wrestling, so I needed it, but I need to get a real job too. So switching from A to B without going broke is really hard as a pro wrestler. Mm-hmm. 25 years I've been doing this. So finally, Judy goes online. My wife, Judy Bagwell, which is the same name as my mom, but still.
Interesting.
That's another story.
Okay.
Same middle name too, by the way.
Super creepy.
I got two Judy Ann Bagwells. One I'm married to, one's my mom. Please, it's just too deep.
Okay.
And so she goes online and sees this Gigolo show. And she tells me about it. And I said, that sounds pretty cool. I said, call Kevin, which is my agent. I said, call Kevin and see what he thinks. So he gives them a call, and they flip out about it. They put me on this thing, and I get 11,000 more hits than all their guys put together.
Right.
So as soon as that happened, here come TMZ, here come I'm doing an interview on Monday with ESPN about gigolos on ESPN. I'm not even sure how that fits in,
right.
But I'm doing it at 2:40 on Monday.
It's Globe. You remember him from Global 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They have the footage. They own it.
Yeah, they have the footage.
Right.
So anyway, we didn't really think this would happen. So really what happened at first was is we just tried to find something to get me into to make money because we're digging and trying to make it like everybody is right now. And now it's turned into, oh boy, we may be in this thing a little too deep.
Yeah.
You know, but now that I really understand everything, it's contractual. It's a companionship. You can't have sex on Showtime. People don't realize that. People that are listening, let me tell you once again, you can't have sex on Showtime.
I don't know. I used to watch some stuff on Showtime when I was a kid.
Now, you may think they're having sex. It may look like we're having sex, but we're not having sex. We can't. Showtime can't. It'd be a total legal thing. We'd be, you know, there's no way to do it. So that's why, you know, this is a companionship thing. It is when Tom Cruise dies in the wreck and you cry because he died in the wreck and you leave the movie theater, you quit crying because you realize he really didn't die in the car wreck. This is a television show and it's a good television show, but it really is women that could hire my companionship to go out to a party, to dinner, to whatever, and they charge for it. And even the other day, TMZ knew the rates, and I didn't even know the rates. But if you go to Cowboys for Angels, they'll tell you the rate. It's like $800 for 2 hours, $25,000 for a weekend, I think. And they got the whole breakdown of what I get paid. They hardly knew what I get paid, and I don't even know yet because this all happened so fast.
Right.
And, I mean, TMZ was here today, and they did an interview with me backstage. So this is just taking off like wildfire, and me and my wife are really kind of in too deep. So the story to TMZ is, well, y'all must have an open relationship. And I'm like, no, my wife trusts me. In other words, where I want to take the date is where I want to take it, you know. And if I want to take it as far as I want to take it, that's up to my wife to trust me. And that's what it is. We do not have an open relationship. We're not swingers. Me and my wife have a normal relationship. It just, we bit off a little more than we could chew, and then we learned how to fix it and still, you know, make money at it.
Well, it's good.
It's trust and companionship, and that's what I do when I go out on dates.
And fun, because here you are, like you said, 25 years, what do I do now?
Yeah.
But it's like I've been in the limelight for, you know, for 20 years on television. Yeah. I've been a television wrestler or whatever, 15 years.
Right.
So here, it's nice.
Then when Gigolos found out all that, they went nuts over it and loved it, and they're using it for every benefit to promote their show.
And you know how TV works.
Yeah.
You know the deal.
Yes.
So it's not like you got to be taught how to do this.
No. Right? So they're just thrilled. Showtime is thrilled to death over the whole thing. My very first debut was this past Thursday, and Nick is one of the gigolos. He got 830 hits from women. I got 801. I was second on my very first show when these guys have been, this is their fifth season.
Right.
So I beat every other gigolo my very first show except Nick.
Right.
And so they just went nuts over it. And that's when everything really started.
You and Nick are like the Buff Bagwell and Scott Steiner.
Yes. But you know what? He's the one that had on the show, if you watched it, he was the biggest Buff Bagwell fan. He was like, man, I got to admit, I wanted to be a pro wrestler, and I got a little bit of a man crush on Buff Bagwell. Yeah. I like him. He's cool, man. And they were trying to dress me, and they go, man, he's got his own image. Leave him alone. Da 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 da. You know, so it was really cool. Everybody was really nice, and it's just another avenue that could open up some doors, and I'm just excited to be part of it, you know?
Life. You're in it.
I'm in it, brother.
Yeah,
Go with it. Go with it, right?
At Real Buff Bagwell. Facebook, Real Buff Bagwell.
Yep.
And the show is Showtime. What time?
It's called Gigolos. So it shows at 11 p.m. on Thursday nights.
Wonderful, man. It's great to see you.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I love your success with this stuff. And if I come on again sometime, I'd love to.
Very cool. Thanks, Buff.
Thank you.
All right. Crazy story up front. And even more awesome that he's gigoloing. He's gigoloing these days. Buff Bagwell, he's a regular dude, and I like him. I like him. He was nice, man. Really nice to me. Kind man for now, right? I don't know. People go through different phases of their careers. I know everyone hates somebody at every time, and maybe I'm going to stop holding some grudges for people that I disliked when I was younger or for different reasons. Fresh starts. Yeah, I think so. Fresh starts would be hypocritical if I didn't fresh start people. So if I hate you when you're younger, email me at Cold Wrestling, and I'll try to like you now. No. Buff, good stuff from Buff. All right, before we get out of here, let's get in some plugs and
upcoming events.
All right, the best way to support ColtMerch.com and DigitalColt.com. Follow me on Twitter at Colt Cabana. I have a public email, ColtWrestling@gmail.com. Every single Monday on YouTube, Marty and I, you can find us, WorstPromoEver.com. ColtCabana.com is the website P.O. Box. I got a snail mail. Send me something fun. And I got a newsletter. Oh, man, I forgot to talk about this. Box Brown sent me this in my P.O. Box. It's a book about Andre the Giant. And you're like, Colt, I know. Stop sending him books. He doesn't like to read. It's a book, but it's all illustrated. And it's like a giant comic strip with, like, not that many words. And different stories in cartoon version. Very good. I really enjoyed it. Congratulations, Box Brown. Good book, good addition to the wrestling world, and a good send to my snail mail. Well done. I also have the Facebook/AOW podcast. Upcoming Friday, March 21st, Berwyn, Illinois, AAWrestling.com. Saturday, March 22nd, Joppa, Maryland, MarylandWrestling.com. Saturday, March 30th, Lima, Peru for GLL Peru. And then Mania Weekend. This is going to be a lot of fun. Thursday and Friday, April 3rd and 4th, 9:30, New Orleans, Louisiana, Colt Cabana and Friends with Marty and some guests. Each night, we're going to watch wrestling movies, and we're going to do the commentary over it. Tickets are going. It will sell out. Go grab those tickets. Watch some movies with us. TNMComedy.com/Colt. Saturday and Sunday, the 5th and the 6th, WrestleCon. Autographs, pictures, wrestling, live art of wrestling. Saturday night at midnight. Even if you don't want to buy the session, you can show up after the Hall of Fame and get a $5 ticket for $5 wrestling. It's all going down at WrestleCon.com. Then April 12th through the 26th, I'm going to be in Tokyo, Japan, touring for Pro Wrestling NOAH. When I get back Thursday and Friday, May 1st and 2nd, I'm not going to be there, but Matt Classic will be in Los Angeles for LuchaVavoom.com. All right, guys, there it is. That is the show for this week. Big thank you to you at home for listening. Thanks to Buff Bagwell. Thanks to Cable Guy Jeff and Stu Stone. Thanks to Kid Russell and Matt Jenkins on the music. Big thanks to Hulu Plus. Watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. Watch on your computer, your TV, smartphone, or tablet. Grab 2 weeks for free by going to HuluPlus.com/Colt. Helps me. I help you. Everybody wins. That is the show. This has been The Art of Wrestling. That sounded so Jewish. Oh, man. For Colt Cabana, I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
Today's Man Whore.
Legendary wrestler Buff Bagwell. He is now a full-blown gigolo.